As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman. Today we talked with Andrew Dumont, entrepreneur in residence at Betaworks and former business development at Moz. He was also the co-founder of Stride CRM, a app that he ended up selling to Heaton Shah and Neil Patel. What'd you think, Joey?
I thought this was really interesting. You know, we always hear people who have quit their jobs or their goal is to quit their jobs to pursue their app or their side project full time. And here you've got a story about someone who was doing such cool and challenging things at his full-time job over at Moz that he actually sold his side project, which was growing in revenue and doing really well. And he has great reasons for it. Really interesting to hear a different side of that story.
We also got into the difference between business development and sales, and talked about the way that he balanced his time when he was working nights and weekends on Stride and during the day at Moz. It's a really great talk. Enjoy. We'd like to take a moment to thank our awesome sponsors. CodeShip makes continuous delivery simple and easy. Go to codeship.com/rocketship to get 20% off 3 months.
We'd also like to thank Envision App. Envision is by far the best prototyping and collaboration tool on the market. I can personally say I can't imagine delivering another design comp without it. Go to envisionapp.com/rocketship and sign up to get their starter plan free for 90 days.
Customer.io is a modern email platform built for startups. Go to customer.io/rocketship to start sending emails that convert.
So I've kind of been a startup junkie for quite a while. I did my first startup when I was about 18. I'm 26 now, so I'm been doing it for a little while, and I just kind of have fell in love with the process of building companies. So I've been a part of Moz and Seismic. I'm now at BetaWorks as an entrepreneur in residence, and have done a few other projects along the way. So I've just kind of been doing, building, growing startups for quite a while.
And while you've been working at some of these other companies, you've been building things of your own on the side, right?
That's right.
Can you talk a little bit about how you are able to balance that? Because I think everybody knows how much work it is. And we all have side projects that we work on, but you were able to turn your side project into a really legitimate money-making business and actually sold it. Can you tell us how you were able to manage that?
Yeah, well, I mean, like any side project, I didn't really go into it with the intention of doing that. So, you know, it really started with an own frustration that I had. So the product that we built was called Stride, and you know, we used a we used Salesforce and some other tools internally, and they were just really clunky and difficult to manage, and we just needed something really, really simple to manage deal flow in a business development capacity. So you know, we kind of built something for our own use, and you know, like most good side projects, once it kind of solved our problem pretty well, we decided, okay, you know, why don't we make this public and see what happens with it? So we put it out there. We put a price tag on it from day one, and you know, got a good initial batch of customers, and it just kind of, you know, grew and became its own thing through that whole process. So yeah, it kind of happened serendipitously, and it was a ton of fun.
And then, did you guys start seeking buyers for it, or did they come to you?
We kind of found out through the process that, you know, we didn't really love the idea enough to do it full time. And, you know, we all had our own individual day jobs that we actually really, really liked. So it really wasn't from a place of us, you know, wanting to leave our job and go independent or anything like that. We actually enjoyed what we were doing quite a bit. So, you know, when it started taking off and it was getting enough revenue to start supporting ourselves independently, you know, we kind of started getting behind on feature requests and, you know, keeping up with the community, and it you know, to be honest, it kind of felt inauthentic to do it as a part-time gig at that point. So, you know, we really made the decision at that time whether, you know, we wanted to go full-time on it or whether we, you know, should shop it around and try to find a good home for it where, you know, it would live on and the product would evolve and the service would continue. So that's actually what we did. And I knew Neil Patel and Heaton prior, and you know, they're amazing SaaS entrepreneurs. So we got in touch with them, and they were able to provide an amazing home for it. So that's kind of how that whole process came into play.
And how long were you working on Stride from beginning till the time that you sold it?
About a year.
A year. So during that time, I mean, I know it's difficult to balance these side projects, but did you? A lot of people, I think, can come home from work and code and build things or design things. But I'm curious how you worked with customers, even in some of those off hours, in things like customer service and sales, even.
Yeah, I mean, it was super difficult. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you and say that it was very easy. I mean, the you know, I had to be very self-disciplined with when I was working on Stride and when I was working on my day job, and I really worked very hard to not let those two, you know, those two obligations, you know, overlap with each other. So when I was at work, you know, I made it very, very clear that, you know, I was working on work. And when I left work, you know, then I would, you know, open up my email for Stride. So, you know, there was a lag, right? Like, so from a customer support standpoint, you know, there'd be times where, you know, it would take, you know, 24 hours to get back. But I always made it a point to get back at the very latest within 24 hours. So it was just really drawing, you know, very definitive, very fine lines between when I was working on my day job and when I was working on my side project. And it was difficult. And some days, you know, those lines kind of got a little bit blurrier. But yeah, you just have to be very, very, very self-disciplined. And really, there was just no days off. You know, Saturdays and Sundays always was working in some capacity on Stride. So yeah, it's tough to do.
So did it cross your mind to quit your job and run Stride full time? Why was it more of a decision for you to sell it versus take it on full time?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. I mean, looking back, I don't know. I think it was because I entered it not in that frame of mind, that when we got to the, you know, to the amount of revenue that it really could have been a possibility to go solo on it, it just, it didn't really appeal to me for some reason at that time. Now, looking back, I may have done that actually, because I really love the idea of going independent at one point in my life. So I'm not sure. I think it was because I kind of entered with the frame of mind of not doing that. Yeah, I don't know if that's not a great answer now that I think about it, but at the time it made sense.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And, backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
Yeah, I can understand that, definitely. I mean, we live in this world where everyone's constantly touting entrepreneurship and how amazing it is. And I love doing my own thing, but I tell people all the time it's not for everybody, especially depending on what your goals are. And if you're not ready to like fully take it on, I definitely understand that.
Yeah. And you know,
when you have a good thing going, like it sounds like you were doing really exciting things that would have been really difficult to walk away from. You weren't necessarily sitting at some boring corporate job that wasn't challenging or anything like that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So you said that you were working Saturday, Sunday, nights, holidays, everything. You've written a lot about work-life balance and how there's really no such thing in this industry. Do you feel like that's just for you, or do you really believe across the board, if you want to be successful in this industry, that you kind of have to give up that notion of having it all?
Or was that just a sign of the times, having, you know, a full-time job and a side project?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, this is it's kind of a controversial subject. I mean, there's a lot of people that I know that, you know, are very, very successful entrepreneurs, and, you know, they've done an amazing job of building businesses and then delegating specific functions that kind of took the majority of their day, right? So, you know, there's a lot of people that have figured out how to do that, and I don't think that it's a requirement to just work a ton of hours to make it. But I think at the beginning, you know, you really need to make a conscious decision that, you know, getting to that point of potentially being able to, you know, hire people or delegate certain tasks that are taking the majority of your time. To get to that point, you know, I think you really need to make a conscious decision to really invest the time and work extremely hard for some period of time. You know, the way I view my life, which this may be incorrect, and I bet a lot of people will disagree with this, but I kind of front load my life in terms of how much I want to work and all that to my age that I'm in right now, and where I was, you know, when I was 18. This span from now until probably, you know, mid-30s, I want to work as hard as possible and produce as much amazing stuff as I can. And then hopefully at that point, I'll be in a good place financially and you know, both with my career and all that to kind of slow down a little bit and kind of make a conscious decision to pull the reins back a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, it's a tough decision, or it's a tough discussion, but yeah, I mean, I definitely think to reach success, you know, I definitely haven't found it myself. You know, I've had a few things, but I'm not anywhere near as successful as I want to be. You know, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of work, and there's no easy way to go about it. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's part of the deal.
So how do you measure that, the success that you're working towards? Do you have something in mind that you want to achieve by 30, or is it just that you want to, you know, be on the right track by that stage?
You know, I definitely have goals, right? I have things that I want to do. Like, I'd love to write a book. I would love to do, you know, all these things. I have, you know, business milestones in terms of how big and how strong of a business that I can build. You know, there's things like that that I have to help kind of quantify and, you know, let me know when I have reached certain things. But, you know, it's, you know, there's no answer, right? Because even when you do achieve some goal you set out to achieve, there's always another goal to set out to achieve, right? So it's kind of an always evolving, never-ending process. So, and yeah, you know, what I'm telling myself about, you know, mid-30s or whatever it is, kind of pulling back the reins, we'll see if that actually happens. But it's what I'm telling myself anyways.
I think it's unique that you were working on this side project, but you were at a job that was fulfilling you to where you wanted to stay. A lot of people only talk about wanting to go the other direction. So that was at Moz, right?
Yeah.
And doing biz dev there, I think it was an unconventional environment in the way that you approached it. Can you talk to that at all?
Yeah. So Moz is really interesting. You know, whenever you think about SaaS, you know, people just kind of generally, you know, blanket SaaS under one category and it, all the business models being exactly the same. But, you know, at Moz, actually a great comparable that I look at when I talk about Moz is Moz and HubSpot. So we were similar spaces, but HubSpot, you know, they had a higher priced product and, you know, they invested very heavily in a sales team, right? Because their whole business was leads driven and thus sales driven to convert to a higher price point. Moz, on the other hand, was, you know, much lower price point, completely self-service. And that's how we wanted the business to scale and that's how we wanted the business to grow. And that's how we grew that business. So, you know, with the context of, hey, we don't have a sales team, but we need to figure out a way to continue to grow Moz at the rate that it's growing. That was my goal in my function. So, yeah, so really what I was working on was just channel development, right? So figuring out ways to work through partners to help distribute our software, you know, developing new businesses like our API business, helping develop that business, you know, looking into acquisitions that we made of other software products. So it was, you know, it was a very unique position and very challenging, but it was a ton of fun. So yeah, it's you know, for businesses that are completely self-service without a sales team, you really just need to, it acts more as a marketing function and figuring out how to grow through other companies that have the same audience or a similar potential audience that you do.
Do you think that changes the timeline of growth?
Yeah, it totally does. And, you know, at a certain point, like, for example, when I had just left Moz, and we're super transparent about revenue numbers, so I'm not telling anything that's not publicly out there, but I believe we were right around 32 million a year in revenue. And prior to that, you know, we had been growing over 100% every single year. And during, you know, at that scale of revenue, it's not easy, right? But it's much easier to grow at that scale of revenue. But once you get to, you know, 30 million a year, you know, doubling revenue purely on inbound, non-sales driven customer acquisition, it gets harder and it's more of a slog. So I think at a certain point of revenue, you almost have to kind of switch over to a sales driven model, you know, and I'm not sure, you know, where Moz is going to go with that, but I know they were thinking about it. So yeah, at a certain point of revenue, it gets really tough to just grow on the inbound channels.
So tell us a little bit about the difference between a pure salesperson versus biz dev, because I know there's a lot of misunderstanding there and you've written an article that explains the difference perfectly. I'd love to hear it in your own words.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's a misconception that I think just, you know, a lot of people, I think the misconception actually comes from, you know, a lot of people that get into sales, you know, they don't want to call themselves a salesperson. Not because there's anything wrong with sales, but I think when you reach out to a client and, you know, you're a sales professional and that's kind of your title and your signature, you know, most people, you know, on the other side of that may kind of pull back a little bit and know, okay, I'm getting sold to, right? So it kind of, you know, shifts the discussion a little bit. So it seems like a lot of people have kind of, you know, brought in the business development title to kind of help remove that. So I think that adds a lot to it. Or people are just kind of using that as a catch-all for anything that has some sort of outbound capacity to it. So, you know, business development, I think, you know, obviously there's components of sales, right? You need to be able to pitch, you need to be able to describe things in such a way that they, you know, they make sense and they're compelling. You need to, you know, find the right contacts, do the right, you know, initial outreach, stuff like that, right? So that all exists and there's definitely some overlap there. But, when I think about the pure difference between the two, you know, sales is direct from the business to the end customer, right? And when I think about business development, there's an intermediary step there, which is there's the business, there is then the partner, and then that partner then becomes the end contact to the customers that you're looking to acquire. Basically working, you know, through partners and through other companies to help reach your end customer instead of going to them directly. And I think it's a small difference, but in the way that the function is practiced, it actually changes things quite a bit. And like I said, it becomes more of a marketing function than a sales function.
So you made the transition, or you worked at the same time at a more mature company like Moz and a brand new startup like Stride. So what translated over from the biz dev work you were doing at Moz? Did it apply in the very early stage or only certain things?
Yeah, it did. It did. And you know, it actually made me learn something about the, you know, the product distribution piece. So working through other communities or software providers, you know, Stride didn't have nearly, obviously, the brand that Moz had, right? So, you know, when I would, you know, reach out to other software companies or communities to help me distribute Stride, that was a very different discussion than when I did that for Moz. So, you know, it definitely taught me that, you know, that brand value that you create through the other inbound marketing channels, like content and social and all that stuff, not having that initial legwork done definitely makes the whole process, you know, much more difficult. But yeah, I mean, you know, at Stride, it was great because I got to dabble in, you know, paid acquisition. I was, you know, running all of our paid acquisition campaigns across retargeting and, you know, all the social channels as well. So, you know, you got to play with stuff like that. I got to play with, you know, helping reduce churn and all that stuff. So I really got a more, you know, full-featured look at how to grow and scale a SaaS business, which was, you know, really what I was really interested in. So, it was great.
And that's one of the hardest parts of it, is having all these things that you have to do and deciding what to work on that week.
Right.
Or that day, like, should I focus on the churn problem or should I focus on pulling new customers in? And sometimes it's really hard to justify pulling in new top of the funnel when you haven't figured out everything below.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think it's something where below isn't ever really fully figured out and you can't wait on that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, Moz did they had an amazing marketing team there. And, you know, the marketing team did a very visual look at what our funnel looked like. And, you know, that's kind of how we prioritized at Moz, you know, what to focus on. You know, if we saw that, you know, the benchmark that we typically should be at or other companies like ours should be at, you know, we were way below or way higher from a churn perspective, then we knew that, okay, there's the big opportunity, right? And, you know, it's funny, a lot of SaaS companies, they kind of forget about churn. You know, they think once a customer is gone, they're gone. But, you know, we've done a lot, or at Moz, we did a lot of re-engagement campaigns and those were extremely effective. And, you know, from a pure time investment standpoint, you know, once you look at somebody that churns or is a customer, maintaining or bringing, engaging people that had churned out, that was something that moved the needle a ton for us at Moz. And it definitely helped that Stride as well.
So you're over at BetaWorks now. It's been a little bit of time since you were at Moz. You're at a new company with new goals. What are some of the new things that you're trying? I mean, I know biz dev is a pretty creative position in my mind. It's not just going out and like hunting down integrations to do and checking things off a list. So I'm curious how things have changed and what the new things in biz dev that you're trying at BetaWorks.
Yeah, well, so I'm in more of an entrepreneur in residence type role at BetaWorks right now. So it's nice. I've taken what I've learned. I'm able to take what I've learned in a BD function and apply it to a more general entrepreneurial standpoint. So basically I'm working on a new product within BetaWorks right now. So that's kind of where I'm focused on. So it's more of the Stride function than it was the Moz function right now, which is great. And, you know, I spent quite a bit of time as well working across Instapaper, I helping them move from paid to the freemium type model, and I've been spending a bit of time with Dig and quite a few other companies in here. So it's a really cool environment, and I'm trying to spin up something new right now.
Awesome.
That's awesome. I didn't know Instapaper was in there.
Yeah.
I've been using them for a while.
Yeah. No, we have Dots in here as well, which is a game that I have on my iPhone.
Don't even start.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Matt's addicted to that game. Well, cool. Thank you so much for coming on. This was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you tell everybody where we can keep up with you online?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter at Andrew Dumont. And then I maintain a personal blog every once in a while that is just at andrewdumont.me. Yeah, I contribute occasionally on 99U and Inc. So every once in a while, you'll catch me there as well.
Great. Thanks awesome. So much.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And while you're there, make sure you sign up for our newsletter, where twice monthly we send out actionable advice for entrepreneurs and exclusive links to AMAs with our guests. That's rocketship.fm. Sign up today.